Hello, TSF family, and welcome to episode 11 of season 7 of This Spiritual Fix. Today we are talking about the final of the 9 villains, the Invisible Destroyer, also known as the Nothing, the 9 in the Enneagram, and the Open Head Center. Enjoy!
Hypnosis. Mindfulness. Meditation. Past life regression.
This spiritual fix. Two mystical mamas hacking the self-help game.
With Anna Stromquist
and Christina Wiltsey.
Hello, Anna.
Hello, Christina.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to get to our last episode on the villains. Our last villain.
Yep.
Okay. So, Christina.
The Invisible Destroyer, a.k.a. the Nothing, which is probably the best term for it, more so than the Invisible Destroyer, though the Invisible Destroyer has actually helped me to understand it, because the way this arc works is that, like, on the one hand, you have the Invisible Destroyer, and on the legend side, you have the Architect, who's actually creating. This arc is all about creation, and the 9 in the Enneagram, which is the Peacemaker. It is the head center in human design, which is a pressure center for inspiration that comes from above. It is the higher father wound, as I sometimes call the separation wound. And it is a representation of, it's just, yeah, it's like the crown chakra, the head center, whatever you want to say. And it is the house of addiction, honestly, when it comes to anything. Everything has its own version of addiction or things like that. But I found that most of the time when you're in a space of addiction, because of the particular ways that each of them deal with a strategy, it's mostly this one that finds it, that finds solace in actually fully trying to escape the body and the experience of the body. If you resonate with the 6, the divisive immortal, and the 5, the evasive expert, and you can't decide which one you are, then there's a very good chance that you are an invisible destroyer. It's a combo of the two. You are the Nothing. Okay, so for anybody who watched The Neverending Story all those years ago, I'm reading it to my kids right now. It's great.
Is it better than the book? I mean, is it better than the movie?
So, like, we're like maybe a third of the way through the book, and I'm finding we're to the point which would have been the end of the movie, right? Like, the main action of the movie would be done, and we still have 2/3 of the book left. So
awesome.
I think a lot's going to happen. The Nothing is a representation of the never-ending story of what happens when attention and imagination is laid fallow, when you don't use your imagination to then create worlds, to then go out and create things in this world. When you use all of the pressure and all of the information and all the intellect in your mind, but you never actually put it into the real world at all. And so what the Nothing was a representation of, for people who know the Neverending Story, is the Nothing was a representation of a lack of human attention on the world of Fantasia. Fantasia, or as it's called in the book, Fantastica. Fantasia is probably a much better name for it, let's be honest. Fantastica. Because it lacked, like, every once in a while, the book needed a human child to give the childlike empress a new name. And whenever that happened, the world was renewed. And if it didn't happen frequently enough, then the Nothing would take over everything.
She just needed a new name. Do you know what the name is from the book?
Moonchild.
Really?
Yes.
What was it in the movie?
Moonchild. Nobody knows whatever he yells out the window in the storm. He yells out Moonchild.
Is that what he yells?
Yes. It's so fucking weird. It's so weird. I don't know. I really am enjoying the book, because it has so many more little adventures in it. It's just really beautiful. But when somebody is in the worst version of their Nothing, they are in a space in which they're paralyzed by possibility. They feel all the pressure of inspiration and things that they could do, and then they keep asking questions and kind of seeking more and wanting to understand more, and yet they never actually move on it. And so it's the invisible destroyer because in its lack of action, it actually ends up destroying people around it. And that's why you'll see later on, like, one of the subtypes of this villain is the addict. And what you'll find is that it's there's so much to be said that in an effort to escape the world, they actually end up leaving a wake of destruction in their path. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think I know that people who are in recovery will understand this concept a lot. The successful antagonist is the questioner. So if you've ever met somebody who will never actually allow action to happen because they just keep asking questions, you know that person?
It's just so hard for me as an activity sorter. I'm like, just better to do it and do it wrong than to do it, not do it at all.
Exactly, exactly.
That's how I feel about things.
You don't relate to this one at all.
No, I'm like, just
I feel
do
like
it.
You have no nothing in you at all.
I'm like, just do it. And if you get it, if it's wrong, you'll do it. You'll fix it, but just do it.
Exactly, exactly, right? It's like, oh, you know, it's like a joke that my husband is the nothing in my life. Or he's been working through this villain for a couple of years now, ever since he took the course. And the questioner to me is like, it's a little bit like the, that intellectual part in The Five, right? That's like, I'm going to just research something until forever in an effort to try and, you know, constantly question whether I've not have made the right decision.
Do you think on some level it's because they just don't want to do it and they're just looking for excuses to justify their lack of wanting to do it?
That's exactly why they're trying to delay the actual action.
The inevitable. It's like a dishonesty with themselves, maybe, that they just don't want to do it?
Yes. They're very disconnected with what they actually want.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. That's the fundamental aspect of this, is they're fundamentally disconnected with it. They don't find the world an inhabitable place, and they don't find the body an inhabitable place, and so they escape. They escape by delaying action. They escape by addiction. They escape by all sorts of things.
Okay.
As a child, they were very likely, the wounded child version of this is the overwhelmed. They believe that they'll never be big enough to handle life.
Aww.
Yeah. It's a really, you know, it could be that they were overwhelmed because they're sensitive, very similar to what The Five is, or it could be that they're overwhelmed just simply because of all the possibilities of what they could be and what they're not going to get to be. The nothing has to embrace what it can't do, just as much as it has to start doing what it can. The covert is the addict. It's covert because it's escapist.
Okay.
Right? Because you're just like, the questioner is very active. The overwhelmed is, you know, an origin point for this villain. And then the addict is the covert. Somebody sees an addict and they can say, oh, but they're this and they're that. And you can see how the invisible destroyer is destroying them and destroying everybody around them. But it still is a covert because at least they're taking themselves out of the equation. There's a line in this Natalie Portman, Stockard Channing movie called Where the Heart Is. It's about the girl who gives birth in a Walmart.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that movie. I used to watch that all the time. And there's a line that Stockard Channing says in there. She's in recovery, and she says the baby's been kidnapped at one point. And the sergeant says to the woman in recovery, to Stockard Channing's character, she says, is there anyone from AA who might want to harm you or harm the baby? And she says, well, Ned, we're alcoholics. We're pretty content with just hurting ourselves. It's just such a beautifully delivered line.
That's funny.
Yeah. The hero of this is the embodied. They choose presence, actions, incarnation. They choose to live, even if it's to live difficult. Even if it's to have to live in a difficult way. It chooses to live. It chooses to create. It chooses to act, and it chooses to incarnate any creativity or ideas that it has, even if it's going to fail, even if it's whatever. It's like you choose to actually commit to something. Mm-hmm. And that's why they become the embodied. That's why with this one in particular, and all of them, I'm not getting super into detail here, despite the fact that we're talking for about a half an hour for all of them. The hero, one of the best tools for the hero is sexual pleasure. Because
they have to be in their body.
They have to be
create.
Mm-hmm. They have to be in their body. They have to create. The act of connecting with another person through sex or some sort of sexual activity and pleasure in general, like using pleasure as the mechanism for getting back in the body, is one of the best things for the nothing.
Okay.
The legend is the architect. They build worlds from grounded dreams. this arc is all about imagination, and it's all about really allowing the imagination to do its work in the world. And so as an architect, you build whatever those dreams are, right?
Okay.
As opposed to, say, the eternal child, which would have all these worlds, but their job is to actually go out and travel and experience other people's worlds. The nothing is like, nope, I'm going to do this. So yeah. Do you have any questions about this? Make sure that we're covering everything before we go into the MIT.
You said it was a combination of two, but which two was it a combination of?
It's a combination of the five and the six. And it takes what it takes, which is the evasive expert and the divisive immortal. And the reason it's
the Hannibal Lecter and the
Voldemort. And the reason that it's a combo is that it has the research capabilities, and it has the deep, it has that questioner part of them who's gonna be thinking about something as opposed to feeling it. Sometimes the dark passenger of the evasive expert is the nothing, mm-hmm. right? It's the addiction. It's the hidden addiction, right? Do you see what I'm trying to say? It's also the divisive immortal, because the divisive immortal also struggles with being in the body.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Should I do the am I the asshole?
Yes, then? Indeed.
All right. Did I fuck up that bad? Am I the asshole? I, 24 male, was just recently dumped by my girlfriend, 23 female. We had an amazing Valentine's Day. She wrote me a card saying thank you for being my Valentine the past 3 years, and she's excited to be my Valentine the rest of our lives. Not even a week later, I get a text saying she's fallen out of love with me and she no longer wants to continue the relationship. Let me explain what happened. On Valentine's Day, I was at her house and her parents invited me out to dinner the next day. I said I would like to go. The dinner was canceled and moved to Saturday, my birthday. They said if I didn't want to go or if I had plans with my girlfriend, I didn't have to go, but I said I'd like to, and I really did want to go. I was excited about the dinner. It was a new place, and I was bragging to my coworkers about it. Anyways, Friday I find out I'll have to come in on Saturday. I don't cancel the dinner plans or ask for a schedule, but I should have. Anyways, here comes the end of my shift on Saturday, and I'm exhausted. I ask my girlfriend if it's okay if I can just go home and relax and see her later at night after the dinner. I was kind of under the impression that the dinner wasn't specifically to celebrate my birthday, but more of a dinner that coincidentally fell on my birthday and they invited me too. I really didn't think they'd be that offended. So my girlfriend said it's fine and that she doesn't want to make me do anything I don't want to do on my birthday. So they go out, and after they get home, I get a message from my girlfriend saying how everyone is upset and I was very disrespectful for flaking, and that if I was more thoughtful in the first place, that I would never mention that I was tired. And that night being my birthday, I guess I was just feeling super entitled, so I didn't apologize. I fought her about it, and then I was so upset I ended up just straight blocking her for 2 days. When I text her admitting it was disrespectful, not even a good apology, I didn't even say sorry, I said I realized I was disrespectful. She said she no longer wants to continue this 3-year relationship. I brought her flowers, and I told her I made a reservation to a restaurant this weekend and am inviting her whole family out to eat on me to show how truly sorry I am. She isn't speaking to me right now and just said, if you change your mind before the Sunday reservation, to please let me know. I want to hear people's thoughts on the situation. Did I fuck up that bad? Is there maybe another reason she doesn't want to be together? How do you go from wanting to spend the rest of your life with someone to wanting to never see them again next week? Okay, edit. Thank you for all the replies. I clearly fucked up. Is there anything I could possibly do to fix this? The reservation is in 2 days and she still hasn't spoken to me since 2 days ago. Should I also send an apology message to her parents, maybe? Maybe they'll have a conversation? I really want to. I'm worried it could make this worse between me and my now ex. Another edit. So something people keep mentioning. My girlfriend did know I would have to work on Saturday. I told her Friday. I was just hoping I would have enough in the tank to make it to dinner. Also, I apologized to her parents. I got them roses and wrote them a card with 2 paragraphs, one in English and one in their native language, sincerely apologizing to them. I also wrote a letter to my ex saying how sorry I was for blocking her and how I realized how terrible it would feel if she did that to me and that I have truly matured from this period. Now I'm just going to leave the whole family alone and hope she reaches out.
Okay. So,
She blocked her. He blocked her. He messed up and then he blocked her.
Yeah. She is got a little bit of obedient critic going on. I can imagine that her parents were very upset and she's like, I need to fall into line and my parents are upset, so I should be upset and kind of do the thing from there. But he flaked the fuck out. He just disappeared. He went outie. Right?
That would be like a nightmare for me with an abandonment wound.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Like, incredibly avoidant. Key words that we can know that this is resonating in the nothing is I blocked her. I decided I was tired. I didn't think it had anything to do with me. Again, it's like he's not even taking responsibility for the fact that, yes, he may have not thought that it was about him, but it was his birthday. And if he'd been in a 3-year relationship, they're going to celebrate his fucking birthday. And maybe he didn't come from a family that did that, right? But like most families would do that, right? And, you know, in all honesty, she did. The reason that I think that she's being an obedient critic and very, very much so falling in line with her parents is because she was like, oh, it's okay. You don't have to come. And then afterwards, like flipped out, right?
Right.
But the whole idea is that, you know, he is continually downplaying the fact that that this would have been important to her family, right? He's continually downplaying his importance. It's very similar to, I've experienced this with my husband, is that like he doesn't think that his presence is actually important. You know what I mean? He's like, well, no, you
then
can.
No one will care if I'm there or not.
Exactly.
But people do care.
No one will care if I'm there or not, but people do care. And so that's why that was like one of the things that I absolutely thought was just so incredibly classic. We made an intervillain playlist. And I don't, we did during the course. We did the intervillain playlist. And Luke shared one of the songs that he had, which to him represented the nothing. It's a Radiohead song called How to Disappear Completely.
Oh my gosh. It's funny because I was going to say, is it Radiohead on the Creep?
No, it's How to Disappear Completely. It's just so ridiculous. Like, you can't even get any more. Like, that's the essence of the nothing. The person who is experiencing the nothing destroys relationships because they think that they're invisible and they think that they do not matter and that their presence does not matter. And that's why this was such a good example of this, right? He's just like, he's regretting it. He wants to be embodied. He wants to be in this relationship, and yet he's not actually capable of doing it because he doesn't recognize that his presence is valued. And I do hope that they forgive it. I feel like I really hope that he doesn't.
He's made a lot of effort.
He's made a ton of effort. He's doing a really good job of like trying to be creative and being an architect of whatever the repair looks like. He's doing a really good job, and I really hope that he sees it. But he needs to recognize how important his presence is.
Right.
Right.
I wonder if the songwriter for Radiohead has this as their primary.
You gotta know that.
I'm a creep. Like, that's all like.
Oh, it's just, there's so, so many radio songs that are indicative of this. Lotus Flower? Holy shit. Let me get the lyrics of Lotus Flower.
Is this a Radiohead song?
It's a fantastic Radiohead song, but it is a Radiohead song. I will shape myself into your pocket. Invisible, do what you want, do what you want. I will shrink and I will disappear. I will slip into the groove and cut me up, cut me up. There's an empty space inside my heart where the weeds take root. And now I'll set you free. I'll set you free. There's an empty space inside my heart where the weeds take root. And tonight I'll set you free. I'll set you free. Is it too loud?
Yeah, it was too loud.
Sorry. Okay. And so all of this indicates just Tom, whether it's Tom York or Radiohead, it's just completely. So slowly we unfurl as lotus flowers, because all I want is the moon upon a stick, just to see what if, just to see what is. I can't kick your habit. So there's talk about addiction, just to feed your fast ballooning head. Listen to your heart. We will shrink and be quiet as mice while the cat is away. Do what we want, do what we want. It's like, it's all that. And so that is the Invisible Destroyer. I think that one of the things that's really important with this one in particular is that there's a reason that it's the last one. It's the 9 that it's going to be. This is that there's so much potential for this to be an absolutely impactful shift and change. But if my husband, he has an entirely filled, defined human design, except for his head center, which is the Invisible Destroyer, which is the nothing. And so for him, he's incredibly susceptible for this to be his primary villain. But I would encourage people as they go through this, or as they start to do this work, and this is something I'm putting in the guidebook, to do the 1 through 6 villains first, and then do the 7, 8, 9 once you've kind of figured out the 1 through 6. Because the 7, 8, 9 are a lot more outward in the world. Mm-hmm. And they're a lot more complex. Oftentimes, if you address the earlier ones, then it gets to be okay. So yeah.
Nice.
All right. Thanks, guys. Let us know if you have any questions. Drop us an email, this.spiritual.fix@gmail.com. Thanks, y'all.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of This Spiritual Fix. If you are interested in finding out what your primary inner villain is, you can go to www.christinawiltse.com to take the test that is linked. That's KristinaWiltse.com. Thanks, y'all. And remember,
humility, gratitude, acceptance, done.
Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing This Spiritual Fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all. You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us. Hi, y'all. Christina from TSF here, This Spiritual Fix. I wanted to invite you to my Substack, where we are about to start a series on the inner villains, the parts of us that sabotage, control, or quietly hide when things get hard. These upcoming posts will walk you through how to recognize them, work with them, and eventually transform them. They're going to be a wonderful complement to what we're hearing here on TSF. And if you are a paid subscriber, you'll also get a new meditation each month to support that integration. You can find it all at ChristinaWiltse.substack.com or search The Life Alchemist. Thanks, y'all.